You are listening to Reality Sandwich. I'm the co-host, Dr. Rafe Eric Biggs, and today's show is about change and transition and moving through it. And our guest this morning is Anjali Saswani. Anjali is a life coach, and she does in-depth coaching services, combining personal and business acumen with body-based practices to ignite authentic change. She's a certified integral coach through New Ventures West in San Francisco. She's also has her MBA from UCLA, and she's also the proud mother of two children. Let's welcome Anjali.
Thank you very much, Rafe. Dr. Biggs.
This morning, our theme today is moving through change and transition. Why don't you share with the listeners a little bit more about your background and how you got into doing life coaching?
I would be happy to. First of all, I want to thank you for having me today. So I've been through a fair amount of transitions throughout my life. I'm in my fourth decade, relatively young for some and relatively old for others, probably just at the midlife point soon. One of the biggest transitions that I went through was being identified with a manager in a corporation. I was very much identified with, I'm a working woman. I'm an executive. I was a successful executive at a relatively young age. And I was trying to have children, and I couldn't. I was 30 years old, and I couldn't have children. I tried for several years. And that kind of there was an awakening in me that it shouldn't be so tumultuous. It should be a little more smooth that I could go through a change without having to stress out so much. I became very stressed. Mm. And so when I did end up adopting my son, Jay, who is now almost 8 years old, I decided to do something where I could serve others and help them move through transitions a little more smoothly. I also wanted flexibility so I could spend time with my son.
That's great. Thanks, Anjali. And what was it that really prompted you to make a career shift?
Well, it was the fact that I had this awakening that all the things that were near and dear to me, like my title, my salary, my office with a beautiful view of the bay. I was in a very good company. I really enjoyed the company that I was working with. But all the things that really mattered sort of crumbled. It was like a house of cards. And so I wanted to do something with more purpose, more aligned to my core. Mm-hmm. And life coaching served that purpose.
Mm-hmm. And tell the listeners a little bit more about integral life coaching. What is that and how is that applicable?
So the integral life coaching in my mind is basically nothing is left out. Everything is included. It's a holistic approach to the whole person, mind, body, somatics. So the mind, body, cognitive, spiritual, relational, and how one integrates all of that together in their, not something that's going to kill you, but something that is causing you some difficulty. So think about that for a few minutes. Now, what do you notice in your body? And you don't have to say this out loud, but Dr. Biggs, you feel free if you would like to. What are you noticing in your body as you think about this situation or this change?
One thing I notice is how my stomach gets tight. I can feel a certain amount of tension in my shoulders and the back of my neck. So I just feel like a certain tightening. And I also notice that my breath starts to get very shallow, where I'm actually holding my breath.
Yeah, very much for me, too. I felt my shoulders going forward. I put my hands together and started clenching them. My breath became more rapid, and all the things that lead to nervousness happened.
Nice. Okay, so you both are very in touch with your bodies. Oftentimes, clients are not as in touch, so I actually point out what is their head doing, what is their neck doing, etc. Okay, so keeping your eyes closed, what I want you both and our listeners to do now is imagine putting your mind's eye into your belly. You may want to put your hand on your belly to give you a little bit of an imprint of that. So imagine that your mind sort of melting into your belly button, a little bit below. Now what I want you to do is take an audible exhale from your belly center to the center of the earth. Okay. And when you inhale, just imagine an upright, dignified posture. So with the inhale, just imagine the upright, dignified posture. And with the exhale, the audible exhale to yourselves, just breathe down into the center of the earth. So again, after a long exhale, you're flowing down, rooting to the earth. Take a deep inhale, creating this uplift through the top of your head. And then soften the muscles around the core with the next exhale. Now take a moment and be aware, we're all energetic beings. Be aware of the space, sort of the heat coming off your body in all directions, front, back, side to side. Imagine about 2 feet in each direction. There's this heat coming off of you. If you can imagine that circle around you, perhaps there's a color or a texture you can assign or associate with it. Now, be aware of gravity, letting your shoulders drop, jaw to relax, sort of melt in with the gravity. Now, put your mind's eye above your head and ask yourself, if there were a little more ease in my being, where would I notice it? Now, remembering that event that you thought of just a few minutes ago, bring it back to your mind. Do you notice any differences, any shifts?
One shift I notice is that my stomach, which was very tight, is much more relaxed now. And I was a little nervous this morning. I didn't sleep as well. And I really realized like all the nervousness is pretty much faded. So I feel a lot more open, feel a lot more present to everyone here and the listeners. So I have a lot more spaciousness to be with the issue that was bothering me from before.
Beautiful.
One of the things that I noticed mainly, and we talked about this last week a lot with Richard Strozzi-Heckler, was the minute and the second you start connecting to your breath, pranayama, your nervous system starts to relax. You start to feel better. Some happy hormones start to peak out. And for me, that's always what happens. I come back to the breath, the nervousness starts to fade out, and I can kind of get back into what's real. So
nice.
Yeah, it was a very nice exercise. Thank you.
Oh, thank you both. Yeah, you both became present, more embodied, I would say. And I noticed a bit of shift, especially in Dr. Biggs. I was watching you a little more closely.
I also noticed, Anjali, that I was kind of hunched over, a little bit more protective. And then when I straightened my back and brought my shoulders back, I felt a lot more confident.
Nice.
And more relaxed. I can feel like more dignity, literally. So it's a very simple and profound exercise. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. And I want to add something to what Rob said about the breath. Wherever our attention goes, that's where the energy flows. As you know, Dr. Biggs, from your background, there's that principle in life, in our bodies especially. So if our attention goes to our breath, our energy goes to our breath, we get that more calming, soothing sensation. The other thing my teacher, Wendy Palmer, likes to say is that it's about the breath is very important, but also the space can hold us. Mm. It's not for us to hold everything together or to fixate on one thing, you know, whether it's the change, a big life change, or perhaps just a lane change on the freeway. it's not for us to necessarily hold it all. We can let the space absorb some of it. So I wanted to add to the breath, the space, and actually she even says space can be ground. It doesn't have to be the bottom floor. It can be on the sides and above us as well.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So I just want to mention, if any of the listeners out there are interested in getting some coaching, that Anjali is welcome listeners to call in. And the number is 415-346-5376. So if anyone would like to call in over the next 45 minutes, we could do some live coaching.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to do that.
Anjali, tell the listeners, I understand you're doing a women's circle in groups, helping them with change and transition. Tell the listeners a little bit more about the work that you're doing there.
Okay, yeah, I'd be happy to. I've been doing several groups over the last few years, and currently I'm entitled this group Strengthening Our Response Ability.
Nice.
Yeah.
Responsibility, not yeah. Listen. Listeners, listen. Response, not react.
Exactly right.
Chosen Joe. Word.
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. You are right on it. It's we get into. It's beautiful. I mean, we're human. We have our humanity. We get conditioned into habitual reactions in life, our environment, and also our our personalities. Some people will call it our karmic destiny comes into it. But paying attention, flexing the muscle of what we call in this model center. So our personalities are beautiful, but we also want to be ambidextrous. We also want our center to be strengthened. And so the more we can rely on center, the less we're relying on our habitual reactions, then we're able to respond from a deep place in our core. It's just the perception changes. The way, again, Wendy Palmer, my teacher, says it is our mind wants to control when we're in our personalities. Our heart wants approval. And we're usually not in touch with our core as much. There's insecurity. But when we shift our perception just a little, like we just did a few minutes ago, our mind becomes more open. The wisdom can come through it. The perception can come through it. Our hearts change from approval to compassion. It's more of a sense of we're in it together. It's not about, I'm not trying to fix you, but I really want to serve you. I want to serve myself. And then when we tap into our gut, it's about confidence, power. And when the three are aligned and then we can relax into the space, let this space absorb some of our stress. I mean, it is an unbelievable, from my direct experience, powerful combination. And in my groups, I do a lot of these exercises and I show people on a somatic level what their reactions are to stress. And then we shift to center and we see how we can respond from a deeper place. And that transfers psychologically, as you know, Dr. Biggs, you've had a big background in your psychology. The thing, when we change our body, our minds can change. We cannot change our minds with our minds alone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And as you know too, Rob, with your yogic background, a master yogi here.
This whole notion of center, I think, is really important. From my own background in somatics, integrating the gut, like you said, the head and the heart, is really crucial because we live so much of our lives in our minds and we're conditioned to learn that way. And there's such an intelligence in the whole body. So for myself, I like to oftentimes bring my attention down into my gut or feel my sit bones, feel my back. These are parts of our body we are not always as in tune with. And then as you mentioned, Anjali, when we can connect with our gut, our heart, and our head, there's a lot more possibility. We're more open, we're present and connected to whatever is facing us. And so instead of reacting, we're responding or moving into what it is that is confronting us.
Yeah, very nice. And I've had women in my groups who are quite high-level executives, mid to high-level executives. And, maybe one of the first questions is, why do I have to breathe, to Rob's point? What does this have to do with my leadership? Why am I breathing here? And I tell them, don't believe me. Find out from your direct experience. Try the exercise on for size. And, inevitably, some people take a little longer than others, but they see that their leadership presence can get expanded to fill the room. That's a leader. A leader is not about you and me, Rob, you and me, Rafe. It's a personal, it's more of an intimate, larger perspective, a larger sense of being. Like, great leaders over time, if you think about them, like Nelson Mandela or, somebody else, Martin Luther King Jr. also comes to mind. They really had a presence about them. And they really could fill the space without sucking the air. So I teach executives a lot about leadership in that way, how to be inclusive, how not to take things personally, but able to, the ability to expand their presence. And this comes directly from the conscious embodiment work from Wendy Palmer that I'm just, I don't know, the stars have aligned when I found out about this work several years ago. It just has been invaluable to me and to many of my clients.
That's great. Maybe share with the listeners some other practices that you've learned that would help them move through change and transition. It's maybe some practices that are more somatically based or body based, or integrating all the different pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the easiest things we can do, sort of piggybacking on the little exercise that we just went through, is just putting our hand on our belly center. Perhaps one hand on the front and one hand on the back. If you have, I wish we had a little visual here, but if you have one hand about 1 or 2 inches below your belly button and your other hand parallel to that behind you, then it's sort of a reminder that there is this there is this core being in you. Because as you mentioned, Dr. Biggs, the energy often in our culture comes up and we're very head focused, you know, brain frontally focused, our eyes, our actual brain, but then also some of us are very heart focused. I know for me, I'm very heart focused, and my heart expands. But it's beautiful to have a big heart. But if we're all heart, then we're losing that other confidence. We're losing that other perception. So to get that balance, I often put one hand on the front, one hand on the back, and it just reminds me. And you can kind of do that in a meeting. I have clients. I have a client who's a drummer. And he's been working with some of this, and it's been really amazing because he's already very embodied that things are shifting quickly for him as I teach him some of these intention practices. Mm. Another one you can do in a meeting for those executives out there is just put your hands to the side of you and actually feel your hands with your palms facing behind you, almost like remembering that space behind you. So you're putting your hands, touching your legs so you can have that somatic imprint of your hands, but your palms are open to the back. So you're listening in the meeting, but you're remembering your back body. So you're not what Wendy would call eclipsing with the person who's speaking. Like in psychology, I think you call it enmeshed, Dr. Biggs, or being a little enmeshed. Or,
well, when I think of the back body from the background that I've been in somatics, it's very much about our history and our experience and be able to lean. As Americans, we're very much forward oriented towards the future. And oftentimes I'll notice clients are either have their head forward or their body's leaning forward. So being able to sit back or just notice and feel your back body can give you a lot of strength and confidence. And that's one thing that's always, almost always overlooked with most of the clients I work with. And it sounds like you as well.
Absolutely. And I myself had that posture, and I still have to remind myself I was very much leaning forward with my neck. My heart was also a little forward. That's kind of my pattern of stress. And my gut, my core, and my hips were back. So I had this split in me, very similar to what you're talking about. Like the alignment was very difficult for me. It took me, because I had that for about 35 years. So it's taken me about 5 years to slowly get aligned, and I get off aligned again and I come back. Mm-hmm. So very similar to what you were saying is my actual pattern. And I have seen it in many others as well, you know, both anecdotally and in a larger perspective. Yeah.
Definitely. I just want to share with the listeners that it's not about being centered all the time. It's just remembering, oh, I'm off center. Now I can feel my stomach, feel my back body. Just having a practice to come back to that center is what is really important.
Absolutely. And center to, in this model, the way I look at it, center, it could be, you could call it center, you could call it alignment, you could call it spirit, whatever works for you, where you're giving yourself a break from the ruminating habitual mind patterns, thoughts in the head, feelings in the heart, kind of giving yourself a little pause to see a bigger perspective.
There's two really simple things that I do myself and that I also do with my clients. And you can do it anytime throughout the day, when you're going to bed, when you're on your way to work, it doesn't matter. There's two things you can always do. One is concentrate on your breath and slow your breath down. It's very simple and it will bring you into your body. And like I said earlier, it'll reset your nervous system. It'll bring any anxiety that you may be having and really mute it. The second thing you can do is take any part of your body that you're connected to at that moment and feel it. Mm. Meaning if you have some energy in your legs, go into that energy and just feel what it feels like. Or if you have a back pain, feel what that feels like. Or if your body's feeling great and your arms are just alive, feel what that feels like. And that'll do two things. One, it'll stop you from thinking about the past and the future, and it'll bring you into the moment. Mm. And two, it'll give you an idea of what being body conscious is. And I don't mean worried about your body. I mean, feeling your body.
Right.
Absolutely.
That reminds me, Rob, of another practice that I've worked with clients. Is actually, it's a moving practice where you're walking and you're simply putting your attention on your belly. You're also putting your attention on your length, your width, and your depth. And as you're walking, instead of being your mind, just notice the environment around you. Notice the trees. Notice the wind. Feel your senses become alive by what's around you and what's inside of you. So this is a simple practice you could do for 5 or 10 minutes when you're walking or jogging or going for a stroll, and do that instead of thinking about all the to-do lists.
Very nice. And for those of us who are more visual, I'm actually more auditory, but for those of us who are visual, for the back body, one of the practices we use is find something that really resonates with you. For instance, for me, the ocean is just amazing. So I actually imagine my back as a shore. And to pull myself back, I actually imagine waves hitting my back. And that just kind of realigns me because, you know, our minds are very excitable and they're very seductive. You know, our thoughts are very seductive. So we want to have something that excites us to go back to the practice. So for me, imagining the ocean hitting my back, just like I can feel those waves right now. And it's just a settling. It's just a really nice way to be in the space and be back to my body. Like Rob was mentioning, a way of being more body conscious, including not just me, the physical me, but the space around me is part of me as well. Another thing I want to share from my New Ventures West is where I did my coaching is in San Francisco. One of the models they have, they use a lot of models from Ken Wilber. They adapted models from Ken Wilber. But one of the very simple things is that change doesn't happen until it happens in biological time. Mm. And I think we mentioned a little bit of that earlier. They have a little diagram, which I love, which is how we change or how we stay the same is the exact same process. So for instance, if you can imagine like a circular diagram, I don't know if you listeners or Rob or Dr. Biggs, you can imagine a little bit of a circular diagram. And so you imagine we act in certain ways, the practice we engage in, that is a catalyst to turn us into the kind of person we are, our commitments, our values, you know, reactions, as we talked about earlier, people in our lives, belongings, you know, our natural, normal, comfortable reactions to everything. Because of that, we pay attention to certain things. So what we observe and what we observe and pay attention to, whatever that's the way we act. So where our attention is, that is where our energy follows, and that becomes our behavior. And so these somatic things that you, Dr. Biggs, and I and Rob have started to mention, that actually can shift the pattern. So when you're going through some kind of either traumatic change or even a positive change, for instance, there are women who come to my group, their child is leaving for college, their last child or their only child. It's a positive. They might be a Yalie. They're going to be the Bulldogs back in Connecticut. Wow, I'd be really proud if my son or daughter went to Yale. But it's sad too. There's a loss. It's a change, and we can help become more body centered as we shift.
That's great, Anjali. We're going to take a break here for a few minutes. So when we come back, we'll have more interesting and exciting information from Anjali.
KPLO, San Francisco, 89.5.
Welcome back to Reality Sandwich. I'm your host, Dr. Ray Ferrick Biggs, and we are in the studio is Anjali Sani. She's an integral life coach. And we're just talking about the different changes, the type of coaching that she does, the different changes that people go through during change and transition. And we're just speaking about some different processes that she works with clients. So Anjali, why don't you share with the listeners a little bit more about that?
Okay, thanks. There's no one-trick pony or one-size-fits-all. Clearly, as you can see from our dialogue, the body is very, very central to my coaching. But the cognitive also plays a big part in it. So what I do generally is I'll spend 2 hours for an intake. I'll really find out, I'll actually go into some of the background of the person and really get a knowledge of them, even though my coaching is really in the present and looking towards the future. But there's a model by Ken Wilber called the Four Quadrants that we have adapted to coaching, where in one quadrant, it's about the body and behavior of the person. Actually, the first quadrant is about the I statements. And what I mean by that is, how does the person look at the world? What is their structure of interpretation, if you will? For example, and I know you've seen this, Dr. Biggs, in your clients and in your practice, but you may have somebody who always has the victim mentality. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that? Of course.
You know. Oh, yeah. I work with a lot of people with trauma, so that's a big issue.
Right. And I've also worked with people with trauma. Some victim, as opposed to a victim, I'll give you another one, entitlement. Somebody who's always feeling like, and they don't, it's interesting because, you know, we all have our own blind spots, including, of course, myself. They don't always see that, but everything they say has a victim edge or has an entitlement edge or whatever edge they have, whatever their structure of interpretation is, if you will. So I really want to ask them, really inquire deeply into about themselves. So I really pay attention to their I statements and how they are seeing the world. What I have found is that is applicable to the presenting issue, but that is applicable to almost all issues in their lives, not just the current transition, but the change that happened 10 years ago, the same patterns will come back. The change that will happen in 5 years, you'll see the same patterns, unless you can hold up that mirror in a compassionate, but gentle, but direct way. So the way I do it is I give them some kind of assessment, mm-hmm. grounded in what they've told me.
And when you say grounded, what does that look like?
That means like I'll repeat some of the statements they've told me, or I'll mention some of their body and behavior that I'm noticing. Let me get back to the quadrant. So the second quadrant is about support relationships. So I'll also say, you know, I see that, you know, your sister is in your life, but you have no other strong connections, you know, or there's certain things that they have told me. The fourth quadrant is about their environment, how they work with systems and stuff. And there's a lot more depth there. If anybody's interested later, you can give my contact information. But what I do is from that intake, I really pay attention, really listen deeply. And I find certain aspects of where I get my assessment, and I'll remind them of these things and tell them, you know, this is my assessment. Where am I wrong? Or where am I right? Or, you know, this is the stake that I'm using in the ground for now. And it's dynamic. But once we've established that this is the assessment and they're agreeing with it, I'll find a new way of looking at things that they haven't looked at before. So, for instance, I had a woman come to me about relationships, and she was a beautiful woman. She was of a particular faith, and she was really determined to find a man before she turned 40. And she was out there, you know, she's doing all the right things. She was, you know, she was on the right dating site. She was in the right mixers. I mean, on paper, she was doing all the right things, but energetically, she was very closed, and she was just driven. I have to find a mate. If I meet women, I ignore them because I want to find a man. If I find a man of a different faith, I ignore him because he's not the man of my faith. It was a very linear, directed kind of approach. And so what I mentioned to her was, perhaps the process is less of a chess game, more of a dance.
Nice. So, that's great.
Yeah, very. It seems like her approach is very rigid and dogmatic. And I think a lot of people just need, like our exercise at the very beginning of our show, a little space. And sometimes it's just a little permission to have space. And sometimes it's talking to someone like you and having the realization that, wow, my rigidity and my dogma is really what's holding me back.
Anjali, you mentioned dance is like a metaphor. Do you ever suggest to clients actual physical exercises like dance?
Absolutely. And as you and I know, we do our dance practice quite religiously, I would say. you know, for many, many years, both of us have been doing that, Dr. Biggs and I, and Rob has his yoga practice. Absolutely. For people who are not in touch with their core, which was definitely me, Pilates is a great exercise, yoga, some core yoga. The dance practice that I do, you know, Five Rhythms from Gabriel Roth that Dr. Biggs also does often. I do recommend that to certain people who to really, you know, get in their bodies, have more of a free flowing movement. Some people who are, their energy's more up, which was also a tendency I had. Tai Chi may be a good answer. Absolutely. There's so many practices out there. And I don't want to just give a bucket list of things. I really want to look and listen and feel out both intuitively and grounded, as I said, the assessment. Notice what kind of practice works for this individual and let them try it, you know, try it on for size. The other thing we do with our coaching is we give self-observations. So for instance, with that client, with the woman who's looking for a man, I would give her self-observation for 3 weeks. I would tell her twice a day to notice her interactions during the day, the first half of the day and the second half of the day, and start noticing what judgments are coming up in herself. When she's interacting with the opposite sex, what are the judgments coming up in her mind to herself, to the other, the man in front of her in this case? Mm-hmm. And what is she noticing in her body at that time?
Excellent.
Yeah, and if she gets a pattern, and I, you know, I'm trying not to suggest anything. I'm really trying to say, look at, jot down notes for a period of at least 2 weeks, maybe three, and notice a pattern. If you notice a pattern about that, then we can shift it. The more awareness, to me, awareness is number one. Awareness, once you have the awareness, you need to change the body, change the behavior, and then you can expand into the new transition.
That's really simple, Angelia. That's very applicable for so many people, is having that somatic awareness of what's going on in your body, then having some new practice to shift it, and then focusing on what it is that you want and what direction you're going. I just want to mention, for any of the listeners out there, if you would like to have Anjali coach you, you can call in 415-346-5376.
But it's pretty benign practice, and it seems to help a lot of people. I know it's helped me a lot.
You know, we have a lot of friends and that are either starting families or have families, and I know you do a lot of coaching with women. Say a little bit more about how you would coach a woman who is trying to get pregnant and is struggling with that.
Oh, yes, I appreciate that question a lot, because that also was my very direct personal experience, as I mentioned earlier. I think this is the same principle that we mentioned earlier. What happens is the whole world narrows down into one thing, and that thing is, in this case, getting pregnant. The rest of the space in the room, in the world, the rest of life sort of fades to black in many cases. That's what my experience was. It was very interesting, Dr. Biggs and Rob. I would walk around, and all I would see was pregnant women.
Right.
Talk about energy following attention, you know? All I could see was pregnant. Like, every freaking woman, excuse my language, every person out there is pregnant. Is there any woman between 20 and 50 that's not? But so what I suggest, again, is expanding within our core, expanding from within. And so I will do the body practices to really connect to our inner knowledge, our inner selves, what we really want from our hearts. Often it is, yes, I really want a baby. But sometimes what we discover is we're missing, you know, certain needs are not being met in our lives, and we're putting it into wanting a baby. Or the baby doesn't have to come from our bellies. As you know, in my case, I adopted my son, who I'm extremely connected to. He came from my heart, and I love him, you know, more than anything. And he was my son. I did happen to get pregnant a few years later, which was quite interesting. I was one of those urban myths that came true. But the main thing is to really connect with not only what they want from an emotional standpoint, but what inside of them is really true for them. One way to do that, I found, is just really doing that mindful meditation, really having people sit with themselves for a few minutes a day, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, sit with themselves for a few minutes in front of me, and I'll ask certain questions. For instance, the question of where's the strength in the situation? So you're not able to get pregnant at now, but where's the strength in this situation? You're able to focus more on your career, you're able to focus more on your relationship, you're able to focus on your nieces and nephews, etc. So there's always very different methodologies that I do use, which come from both my coaching background, my business background, and my somatic practice, the conscious embodiment. I kind of combine all those things and work with clients on a very comprehensive level. I could give you a few more specifics, but I think you get a little bit of the gist. Yeah,
that's great. It reminds me of how we were talking about this last week, of how when the body is in fear, there's a contraction that happens. And when we're open, and we can feel more love for ourselves, for our family, for the people around us, the body opens. And I would imagine in the case of woman trying to get pregnant, if there's a certain amount of fear around that, there's contraction that happens on every level of the body, even the organs contract. So by opening more to the possibility and not necessarily putting your full attention on that you desire, but letting go of the attachment of exactly how it's going to show up.
Absolutely.
When it's going
to show up. That's what you said is very profound. Letting go of how it's going to show up and where it's going to be, being open to the wonder of it all. It's going to show up in a very different way. I mean, I didn't, you know, you don't grow up thinking you're going to go to India and adopt a baby, but I did, and that was the most joyful moment of my life. So absolutely what you said is definitely right, I think. Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed that it doesn't mean that desire will fade often. I mean, somebody who wants a child wants a child, but there are different methods to get one. There are lots of course, as we know, the fixer situation. There's a lot of medical interventions. There's some alternative treatments, acupuncture, if you will, and stuff. But the main thing is our mental state, as you said, not to contract our bodies and to have our minds close in on one thing. And that's usually what happens under stress is our own old habits kick in and there's nothing else. It feels like we're going to suffocate in many ways. Mm-hmm. I use an analogy a lot. Like some of us, when we're little, we'd go around collecting bugs in jars and, you know, we'd poke holes in the jar. I feel like sometimes these women or any clients going through change are like the bug in the jar and the cap is on the jar. There is a hole to breathe in, but we're often so pissed off that we're in the jar that we're, excuse me, we're often so upset that we're in the jar that we're, you know, we're like, darn it, why did I get in this jar? How could I put myself in this jar? And we're struggling with that we forget that there's a little passage to breathe. If we could breathe, like Rob mentioned earlier, breathing through that hole expands us, and eventually the jar will probably open and we can fly out. But what happens is, bam, can you hear that? Bam, it's like putting a plate on top of that hole when we tell ourselves, I shouldn't have done this, I always do this, and da-da-da-da-da. It's really, really suffocating in my books, and I've seen that metaphorically in many cases. So I really try to give that breathing room, if you will, to people and hold up that light of awareness.
That's excellent. You know, the other, I'm sure there's a lot of people are dealing with the economy now, and there's quite a few people out of work and looking for jobs. If you had any clients that come to you that are in the process of looking for a new job and in a certain amount of fear around it, how would you work with a client in that situation?
Yes, that is a big one. Yeah, so thank you for mentioning that. I had a client recently that had that exact situation. And this isn't, you know, I don't want to be Pollyanna about it. But in this case, the client wasn't in touch with what they really wanted, their own inner passion. They really wanted to be a photographer, but they were, you know, we all get attached to salaries. We all have bills to pay. And so they could see nothing else but having the same salary in a similar type of job. And so I, you know, I'm not the one who says, oh, well, what about doing photography? What I do is inquire more and let it come out within them. I really believe that if we can deeply listen and inquire correctly, that a person can self-organize themselves quite well, and they can get in touch with their core with the somatic practices. So in this case, this client came to me very stressed, very contracted. I gave them room to expand. I made some assessments. I had them do some self-observation, some practices. And I noticed that kept coming up, that theme of I always wanted to be a photographer. I always wanted to, but I can't now. I have a mouth to feed. I have this, I have that. And, you know, I'm not saying the fairy tale ending is necessarily coming up, but they have made it such that they can work with some of their savings and start doing some photography. And they've had a few jobs coming in. And so there has been this, you know, I can make this a reality. There is the resistance comes in, like, but it won't pay the bills. Or the thought is a resistance. Or the resistance of the spouse or the child that says, but I need a new car. Or we need to pay the mortgage. Or, you know, resistance can come in many forms. Like, I'm not good enough. And in this particular client case, you know, I'm not that good of a photographer, am I? Maybe I am, but I really have a passion. You know, that sort of that ruminating thought. So what I do is I really let them, you know, inquire a little deeper, give them the space to kind of organize themselves and let them notice their own patterns of where the resistance is coming up. And then I'll do a somatic exercise on resistance. I will actually put pressure on them. And again, this comes from the conscious embodiment work where they have their intention ahead of them, sort of like a triangle shape with their hands. And I will put pressure on them, having them think of me as a resistance. And there are three ways that they can do it. They can either steamroll through the resistance, which doesn't usually feel good.
So you're actually speaking about a physical exercise?
Yes.
Where they would be walking towards you? Or
absolutely, yeah. I'm okay. Sorry, it's hard to describe. I appreciate your perspective. So yeah, they would walk towards me and I'd be holding their hands, which are in a triangle shape.
Okay.
And so one way they can do it is just keep pushing, because oftentimes the client is strong. And I'm not, you know, I'm kind of a petite woman, but I can steamroll if I need to. I have that in me, my corporate background. Another way of doing it is just getting stuck. So for instance, in this case, I can't do it. I'm just stuck. What do I do? I'm out of work. You know, my employment benefits are running out and I'm stuck. And a third way is to give up completely. Go into oftentimes into a dark corner, or just say, you know, I'm not good enough, and just abandon the intention altogether. So what I do is I suggest a new way, a centering way, a way to center, a way to have a porous back so that they can have support from the back through nature, through archetypes. One archetype I use is Kuan Yin. To me, she's very powerful and easeful. And so when I feel like I'm overwhelmed and I have too much resistance in front of me, I bring in Kuan Yin in my back, and then I remember my intention in the front. And then I rely on the space around me and move forward with that expansion. It's a little bit hard to explain on the radio, but I hope you're getting a little bit of a taste for it. I would love to show any of you listeners or anybody else, if they want to have a little demo, I'd be happy to give a 45-minute free coaching session to anyone who mentions KPOO.
And Anjali, why don't you just give the listeners your contact information if they want to get in touch with you?
Oh,
and we'll
sure.
Continue with some more questions.
Okay. Yeah. So my email is Anjali, A-N-J-A-L-I, Saw, S-A-W, at yahoo.com. Anjali Saw at yahoo.com. And my phone number, my work phone number is 415-269-5151. So that's 269-5151. I am now in the process of updating my website, which is anjalisawney.com. That's ANJALISAWHNEY.com. So that should be up and running soon. It's right now being updated.
Great. Thanks, Anjali. So we have about five more minutes, and I just wanted to maybe explore with the listeners. One of the things that I am faced with a lot is this negative self-talk. So I'm like focused on what I want, but I have all these like judgments and stories that I'm telling myself that tend to keep me back. So how would you work with a client who's like, I'm always having this negative self-talk. How do I break through with it?
You know, that that comes up a lot. You have your pulse on some of the key things here, Dr. Biggs. You know, I often say, this is just something that's coming to me right in this moment. There are different ways I work with people, similar to what I mentioned earlier. But I often say, write down your story. Write it all out in depth. Make yourself the brunt of all the sucky, awful, terrible things that are happening to you or that you feel could happen or you feel that has happened. Really indulge. I mean, fully indulge in your story. Write it all out, whether it's from the day you were born or whether it's from yesterday to today. Write down your story and get really into it. And then put it aside. And then write down your, then again, do your story. But this time, think of all the courageous, brave, positive things that you feel are happening to you, whether it's from yesterday to today or from when you were born, whatever, depending on the client and what's going on. I mean, some people have like, you know, way back they go. Some people go just week to week, you know. So I would suggest, you know, for instance, Dr. Big, to you, and I know you have a lot of tools under your belt as well, but I would say, you know, just write down all those negative thoughts, get them all out there, and then switch it and start focusing on all the positives in your life. I think there's a Sufi poem that says, abundance can be had by appreciating what's already been given, something to that effect. And so, yeah, that's one way to do it. And that would burn the negative story, and I would frame the positive one.
That's great, Anjali. We are just about out of time, so I want to thank you, Anjali, for coming in today. And I also want to give the listeners a little bit of feedback or give them information about how they can get in touch with me. Again, my name is Dr. Rafe Eric Biggs. I'm the founder of Soma Evolution, and we're an organization committed to generating transformative change in people, organizations, and in the world. You can reach us at Soma, S-O-M-A, evolution.org. And my email address is R-E-B as in boy, I-G-G-S, at mac.com. So thank you, Anjali, very much for being in the studio today and sharing with the listeners so many different somatic and integral practices for helping them to move through change and transition.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.